Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Stephen King Cast, one man's musings on the works of Stephen King. This week, what I'll be doing, I'll be reviewing the seventh episode of Hulu's adaptation of 11/22/63. We have only one episode left, and I will be reviewing today's episode, the penultimate episode of 11/22/63. But first, I would like to do some shameless plugging. So for those of you who have listened to the Stephen King Cast and have enjoyed my musings on the horror genre and wanted to know what it'd be like if I took a stab at the horror genre, then I have some options for you because I've been fortunate enough to have some short stories published in different publications out there. So I'm going to give you the information and I'm going to encourage you to go out and pick them up because I think that as fans of Stephen King, I think that you'll enjoy the short stories that I've been able to contribute to the horror genre. The first of which can be found in Dark Moon Digest, issue number 22. This is a short story entitled Room 207. And what it is, it's a husband on hitting the road to surprise his wife. And he is getting sleepy, so he winds up checking in at a motel and I'll leave it at that, but I think that you will enjoy it. It's a fun story. The next one is Nine Tales Told in the Dark, issue number 9. The short story found within is This World Will Eat You All the Way Up, and it's about two friends with unspoken tension and what happens when the thing that they're not speaking about boils over. And it's all about the iceberg style of storytelling, very character-based. And it's just kind of relentless. Up next, we have Wax and Wayne, A Gathering of Witch Tales. It's a witch anthology, and for those of you who have seen the movie The Witch, and you want a little bit more witch in your life, then I would go out and procure Wax and Wayne, A Gathering of Witch Tales. I think that you will enjoy this particular anthology. Included in this anthology is my short story, Hopscotch, which is all about a bratty 13-year-old girl who kind of gets what's coming to her. So I think that these three short stories, they all have a different flavor, but I think that you will definitely enjoy them. And coming this August, I just want to kind of put it out there already so you're ready for it, but in the Trysts of Fate magazine, you can read my short story, Forget Me Not. So I would really appreciate it, guys. I know that the publishers and editors of these magazines and anthologies would appreciate it if you sought out and just checked it out. Now what I'm going to do, I'm going to read some iTunes reviews because without iTunes, the Stephen King Cast would be nothing. Now, I mean, I know that a lot of people out there just listen straight off the Podbean website. I know that a lot of people out there listen through Stitcher, but iTunes happens to make up the majority of the downloads out there, and what the iTunes has done is legitimize the Stephen King Cast, and I just really appreciate everyone that has taken the time to write a review, because the more reviews that are attached to a podcast, it expands the visibility of that particular podcast. So if someone types in Stephen King, if they were interested in Stephen King based on all the Dark Tower movie news and 11/22/63, and they're like, huh, I wonder what podcasts there are out there for Stephen King, and they type in Stephen King, the more reviewed something is and the more subscribers there are for a particular podcast, that will get bumped up on the search list. So if you've enjoyed the Stephen King Cast and want to kind of help the Stephen King Cast out, then the way to do that is by writing a review. So I'm just going to read a couple reviews here. So we have Gamer's Mom, who writes, best King podcast out there. A master craftsman like Stephen King deserves no less than this podcast. From the endless preparation, the in-depth analysis, to the honest and insightful opinions about King's works, no one does it better. I've listened to other podcasts, and they're fine, but no one tackles the source material like the Stephen King Cast. I've spent hours and hours, and will continue to spend hours, listening to this podcast. So if you are a casual fan, a die-hard constant reader, or Mr. King himself, stop and take a listen. You'll be amazed at what's inside. Gamer's Mom, thank you so much for the kind words. And up next we have Travis D, who writes, "A brilliant constant reader. Wow, I am literally blown away by this fantastic podcast. Intellectual discussions accompanied by in-depth and thoughtful ideas are plentiful throughout this great show. I am 7 episodes in and I am hooked. I never want this amazing show to end. Thank you for creating such an amazing catalyst to help get Stephen King discussed more often like he deserves." Travis, thank you for writing in. And what Travis mentions here kind of harkens back to the very first episode of the Stephen King Cast when I reviewed Carrie. I prefaced the review talking about why I was doing the podcast in the first place. And for those of you who were tuning in for the first time, when I sat down and pondered the Stephen King Cast, I didn't find a lot of Stephen King podcasts out there. And I think this was right around the time when Dr. Sleep came out, and I just wanted to hear someone's thoughts on it. And I did a search and I found some, but I mean, it wasn't what I was looking for, I should say that. So I decided to make the podcast that I would like to listen to, in the hopes that I was contributing to the conversation around Stephen King, because I felt that at that time there was not as much conversation in the pop culture arena, I guess, or on the pop culture stage, revolving around Stephen King. And this is a guy that he was the conversation for anyone that lived in the 80s and 90s. And I want him to be back in that limelight again. So that was one of my mission statements for the Stephen King Cast. Up next, we have 33SMB, who writes, "You need this in your life. This podcast does what I never could quite pull off. It goes through every Stephen King work, even most of the film adaptations. If you are a Dark Tower fan like me, the podcast moves through the entire body of work, connecting all the dots. You will discover things you never knew existed, make connections that you miss on your own reading King's books under the covers with a flashlight. The sound is mixed well, his voice is in good range for binge listening without it grating on your nerves, and the price is great. I tell everyone I talk to about Stephen King about this podcast. Now I'm telling you, it's great." 33SMB, thank you so much. And thank you for the compliment about the voice. That was actually one of the... I mean, no one likes to hear their own voice, right? So I was kind of worried when I sat down to record this. I just didn't know if I had a podcaster's voice. I didn't want to alienate people. But yeah, I mean, I'm not in a studio. I'm in my basement. You probably can hear my dryer, which is on its last legs. So I mean, I try and keep it as professional as possible, but I'm just doing this on my own time. So I'll leave it there for that now, and I'll get back to some more reviews in the next episode. So guys, like I said, I mean, if you have a couple minutes on your hands, just head on over to iTunes. It would really help me out. And anyone that lives overseas, just do me a favor and take a snapshot, a screenshot of the iTunes review for whatever country you're in, and send it my way to StephenKingCast@yahoo.com, because I have no way of being able to check out the reviews from other countries on iTunes. I can only look at the iTunes reviews in the States. So I'm just very curious to see what the other reviews are out there, because I know that there's, you know, I'm fortunate to have viewers all over the world, which is awesome. So, I mean, if you have a few minutes on your hands, I mean, just kindly send me a couple screenshots, just so I have an understanding of what some of the feedback is out there. Okay, guys, what I want to do now, I want to read some listener emails, because I'm not doing this in a vacuum. I want to make sure that I am part of a dialogue, and at the very least, a vehicle for you to be able to express your thoughts on Stephen King, on his books, on how you got into Stephen King, patterns that you have found within his writing, what Stephen King means to you, or anything that I have said that you either agree or disagree with. I mean, just send something my way and I'll be able to read it on the air. So Lauren writes, "Hello, content podcaster. I'm a new listener, but I skipped ahead to hear your thoughts on the Hulu version 11/22/63, which is a beautiful book that I enjoyed very much. You exactly summed up my reservations about James Franco and the necessity of a sounding board addition to the cast. I thought Holden was Derry so much that I wondered how the kids were running around without jackets in October in Maine. I did want to get your thoughts on a couple things. Do you think that removing Jake's back and forth to the future before he saves the Dunnings will also remove or underscore the tension later as things go wrong with stopping Oswald in 1963? That he can't stand to start over and go through everything again? So, Lauren, yes, I do believe that it gives his mission singular purpose, that that even though he is able to go back in the past, this is his one chance to do it. I think that it was a smart move to remove that back and forth and that trial run that Jake had the first time around in the book. And she continues to write, Sadie is a character that I fell in love with immediately, and it seems that the Hulu treatment removed her charming flaws. What are your thoughts on her so far? To me, she seems like a pretty normal, pretty girl instead of the awkward, clumsy diamond in the rough that Jake discovers. So, I like Sadie. I really like the actress that they cast as Sadie. I feel as though she has the amount of charm that she has is, it seems, endless. I love watching her. I think that she's doing a great job. I just think that the character is not serviced very well. And I just don't think that any of the Jody scenes are maximizing their potential. I think that she, along with all Jody life, kind of got a gloss over, and I wish that we had gone deeper. But yeah, I can definitely see what you mean. She doesn't seem to be much else other than the pretty love interest. I don't need her to be clumsy. I don't need her to be tall. I don't need that. But I mean, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more of her perspective with her ex-husband. I think that would have given her some meat to chew on, and we didn't get that. We kind of got the damsel in distress. But we have one scene where she's monologuing to Jake about the secrets of her ex-husband, and I wish that we just got more. Not necessarily the secrets about this ex-husband, but the life that she had lived. How does it affect her now? We never really see her as the librarian. We never really see her as one of the most influential figures and the most beloved characters in this small Texas town. And I would like to see how her previous life and her current life have shaped the woman that she is. And I just don't feel as though they handed it to the actress. And Lauren continues, today I am nervously about to listen to your review of Cujo. I read it for the first time a year or so ago after being familiar with the movie. I was shocked that Tad dies in the book, as I was sure he survived the film version. It struck me very hard and brought me to tears because my middle child at the time was Tad's age. It also reminded me of my mother telling me how hard it was for her to read Pet Sematary because it came out when I was the same age as Gage and we lived near a busy highway. What is it about Stephen King where he can strike so closely to our primal fears? Case in point and Big Driver, among others. And I would say that's why Stephen King is Stephen King, is because he's able to get to that human aspect. So, I mean, he doesn't need a St. Bernard. He doesn't need a Pet Sematary or zombie cats. He can get to the human element there. So she continues, I'm very much enjoying the podcast. It tickles the part of my brain that loves critically comparing books, film, and TV to their source and place in popular culture. Watch out for thinnies and long boys, Lauren. Lauren, thank you so much for writing in. And guys, feel free to write in as well. Then Michael writes, hello, kind sir. I apologize in advance for the length of this email. Like many of your listeners, I encountered King early in life. It was the silver paperback of The Shining and the Salem's Lot TV series back in the wonderful 80s, and my passion for reading began. By the time the 90s were coming to a close, many of King's books and short stories later, my passion to be a writer blossomed. Reading King affects the constant reader differently, but many, I will be so bold to count the both of us among them, are inspired to dabble in the craft of writing ourselves. There is something about reading a King short story written so effortlessly, it seems, that it makes the reader say, I want to do this too. I'm happy to hear you have walked this path and reached the clearing at the end called publication. I look forward to reading your work. Thank you. But the reason I am writing today, besides the fact that your podcast is inspiring in countless ways, is to share the sad truth that endings suck. I both fear and despise them, and how you help me with this. I have read many of King's books and stories over the years, but I am reluctant to read them all. Why, you ask? Because once I do, that will be the end. That's capital T, capital E. Done. Finished. And that, my friend, would suck. As you have mentioned on your podcast, King has struggled with some of his endings, but for me, the result is always the same. No matter the good, the bad, or the ugly the ending is, I'm always left wanting more of the story. Maybe I'm alone in this, and don't get me started on Roland. So I should have said this at the top, but right now, if you are listening to this, spoilers for everything regarding Stephen King. All right, just spoilers on, guys. Okay, so Michael continues, maybe I'm alone in this, and don't get me started on Roland walking through the door at the top of the tower, but I always want more. That's my concern with finishing King's body of work. I applaud and envy the task you have taken in going through it all in order, but at 43, I'm still holding out on a few novels and stories from the past and a few newer ones. I can't bear the thought of putting down that last book and knowing there will be no more. Alas, that day will come for us all. Or come for all of us. That is why your podcast has been nothing short of a treasure that I stumbled upon out of luck, or maybe it was fate. To listen to someone as passionate as I discussing these books, many I have not even thought about in over a decade, is a joy to listen to. You dissect the stories in ways I never experienced when I read them, but as a writer and a reader, I can appreciate on both levels. As a reader, I discover things I might have missed, remember some of my favorite moments, and make me want to go back and read many of these again. As a fellow writer, your podcast is an educational experience breaking down what King was really saying, how he was saying it, and is writing 101 for anyone wanting to pick up the pen. It has inspired and taught me so many things that words alone cannot describe. Thank you so much for your contribution to the Stephen King genre. But this comes around again to my gripe that endings suck. I've savored your podcasts and have listened to almost all of them regarding the texts I have read, but sooner or later I will have heard them all. So I beg you, do not stop what you are doing. I don't know how, but you must continue. Find a way, because the day when the Stephen King cast produces its final episode will be a sad one indeed. Anyway, I finally got around to writing this, something I've been meaning to do since I listened to the first episode, but I must end it here. And I don't really know how to end it because endings suck. Keep podcasting, and more than that, keep writing. Thank you again. Regards, Michael. Michael, thank you for the kind words, and just thank you for... I mean, I just thank you. I mean, I don't really know how else to say it. I mean, a couple people have written in about how this kind of has inspired some people to look at their own writing and to inspire them to write, and I think that would probably be the biggest takeaway from the Stephen King cast is if this has allowed for others to be creative and to create something. I mean, so I'll go into this more in another episode down the line at some point, but one of the reasons why I did the Stephen King in the first place, the Stephen King cast in the first place, was yes, I wanted Stephen King to I wanted to do a podcast about Stephen King, but also there was a point in my life where I didn't have a vehicle for creativity. The where I had been channeling all of my creativity, I didn't have that outlet anymore, so I wanted to do something. So, I mean, I said, hey, I'll create a podcast about something that I could definitely talk about, something that was doable, and that was the Stephen King cast. So I'm happy that this has resulted with actual creation. So, Michael, in regards to the ending of the Stephen King cast, I don't know what the future holds, but I will definitely keep everybody in the loop. Okay, guys. So if you haven't done so already, just write to StephenKingCast@yahoo.com. I mean, share your thoughts, guys. I mean, because we're all constant readers out there. We all grew up one way or another, or have lived in a world with Stephen King, whether we were there on the ground floor when he started it or we were born afterwards, after he had established himself or was establishing himself. But yeah, I mean, tell me what you think. What are your favorite Stephen King books? What was a doorway book for you? What are your thoughts on the incoming or the upcoming Stephen King adaptations that are rumored out there? You know, just whatever you want to write about, I will read it on air for you. Okay, guys. So for 11/22/63, episode 7. Here we are, 7 episodes in. I can't believe that we're here. So we begin this episode with 17 days until the assassination, and Jake is in the hospital. So remember last episode, he got the crap kicked out of him for gambling. And when it begins in this episode, there's a bit of a twist And he awakens not in 1963, but in a modern hospital with cell phones, with Anderson Cooper on the television. It's a disarming way to begin. And we can't help but wonder if we're getting a flash forward. And I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. I mean, this is a show about time travel. So what better way to illustrate the delirium of Jake by playing with a different perspective of times? Now, it turns out not to be the case at all, that the Bridget Carpenter and the director here are not going to really deviate that much from the source material. I mean, we realize that it's just a dream sequence, which is a staple of Stephen King's work, as we all know by now. But I'm going to be honest, guys, it's a trope that when I was a teenager, I thought that dream sequences were so cool. And they are now, this is a trope that I have come to despise as an adult. The dream sequence, I mean, not necessarily this dream sequence, but just any dream sequence, I mean, just generally speaking, does not add to the forward momentum of the narrative. I just don't like them. I find them to be indulgent. They just don't. What do they really? What did this contribute? What did this contribute? I mean, does it remind us for a second that Jake is a time traveler? Yes, it does. But I mean, we live in a binge world. We live in a world where viewers can connect the dots. I don't expect anyone to just tune into 11/22/63 episode 7. You know what I mean? Like, if they do, shame on them. Like, why are we pandering to them? So I mean, yes, I mean, visually speaking, we get the future, then he's in the past. So that tells us that he's kind of time traveling. We get you know, Chris Cooper, and I just, why? I don't see the need for this device. It doesn't give us anything. And that's just, I don't think it gives us anything in this particular episode. I don't think dream sequences give us anything, period. So that's how I feel about dream, dream sequence. So while rehabilitating Sadie, she just tries to get Jake to remember his mission. Now, again, I just don't want to beat a dead horse here, but the idea that he can't remember his mission, it just reeks of wheel spinning. I mean, for a show that never truly gave us a definitive look at the town of Jodi, for a show that never established Jake as an incredible teacher, an influential figure of the town. This, way much more so than the book, it just really feels like a waste of time. To me, it is a last gasp to create tension in the final act as we head into our last episodes, but it's false tension because the show has to conclude at the depository. We know that that's going to happen, so we know that Jake is going to get his memories back to arrive at that precise moment in time. So to spend 50 minutes where he doesn't have his memories, it's just wheels turning and the car not going forward. I thought it was wasteful in the book. I think that's much, much more wasteful in the adaptation. So in order to get his memory back, Jake and Sadie head to visit Bill Turcotte in the hospital, the same hospital that Jake had admitted him to. And we learn that Bill has been receiving electroshock therapy. Now, this is a horrifying idea, guys, that Jake had imprisoned him to effectively be tortured and to have his mind taken away from him. It is very One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Now, Bill didn't leave Jake many other options in the previous episodes, but still, this is a dark, twisted little beat in the narrative, and this is not a criticism. I mean, I really enjoyed this. It shows the lengths that Jake will go to in order to fulfill his mission here, and the price that he has to pay and the consequences of that. And then Bill's story comes to an unexpected and jolting end. I mean, when faced with the reality in which he is not insane, but in fact one in which the time traveler first befriended him before imprisoning him to be tortured and reconditioned, Bill chooses death over living in this reality, which was a shocker and a bleak ending to this character. Now, while I'm on the topic of Bill, I liked this moment, but it has no effect on the narrative, and it completely undercuts Bill as a character in throughout the series as a whole, which is too bad because he was created specifically so that Jake could talk to someone and verbalize his plan and what he was thinking, because the book had been first person perspective. So without that, we need to get in Jake's head, and what better way to do it than give him someone to talk to? And there were moments in episodes 1 through 6 where he functioned as a wild card, and as someone that had read the book, I didn't know what was going to happen with Bill. So when he starts getting close to Marina and he's falling in love with her and he's making out with her and she's attracted to him and he's befriending Oswald and he's integrated himself into the life of the Oswalds, that is some pretty rich material that allowed for Bridget Carpenter, the showrunner, and the writers and the directors to be able to really deviate from the source material if they had wished. There was so much that they could have done. And there was a moment there in last episode where I was getting very, very, very interested in the prospect that perhaps the time traveling from Jake is what caused the second shooter to happen, that Bill was the second shooter. I thought that would have been great. All of that, any potential that Bill had to impact the story completely goes out the window now because he just commits suicide. It's a great moment, but one that does not have any ramifications, and it retroactively forces this character to not have any ramifications on a larger narrative. Then now we are only 8 days until the assassination. No, 7 days. Nope, 6 days. No, 4 days. So time is flying by. And then Jake regains his memories while with Sadie at Lee's apartment. Looking at Lee, he remembers his mission and is torn between murdering the man or not, because at that moment, while gripping a knife in his hand, Jake watches Lee, not as the assassin, but as the father who is holding his daughter. So again, like I said, he all of a sudden remembers. And it completely, to me, it makes the entire time when he didn't remember it pointless. So what was the point? There was no point. I mean, I just rather would have had them fill up that time with something worthwhile, give us some significant character beats here. And then Sadie argues to be part of stopping the assassination, which of course is not going to end well. Those that have read the book will know, you know, what's coming. But I'm not sure about the television adaptation of Sadie. I don't know what's going to happen with her. I don't imagine it's going to work out well for her and Jake. They devise a way to stop the assassination by attempting to steal the fabled rifle, but they're too late, so they have to go through with it. They have to get to Dallas. They have to try and stop him in the moments before Lee is about to kill him. JFK. And the next thing we know, it's 11/22/63. 12 hours to go. While waiting for the next day, the yellow card man shows up in a supernatural flash. Now, this is a character that, in the adaptation, has his own failed attempt to change the past. He's less of a time guard and more of a fellow time traveler, but one with powers of projection, as it's revealed that he spoke to and implored to Jake in a dream. So, in the book, the yellow card man was an employee of like a time travel agency, I guess, who was there to just guard this little bubble that allowed people to go back and forth through time, that was kind of wrecking time and space. And here he's, like I said, he's like, I don't really know what he is. I mean, he's someone that knows that Jake is time traveling. He can recognize that he's a time traveler. He has some sort of abilities. They're not defined. I don't know if we're going to be getting any more of the yellow card man. And his inclusion without the payoff is going to make him kind of a worthless character, right? So we'll find out next episode. With the yellow card man's warning fresh in Jake's mind, he asks Sadie if they should just, look, let history be. Just let it run its course. And you know, should we just start a life together? It's a nice moment. Sadie's having none of it. You know, she knows that there's a greater good here. And when they wake up in the car, they find that the car won't start, because of course it won't. Time is pushing back. Again, we are reminded that time is a character in this story, and it has motivations that conflict with our character's motivations. And what I would say is nice mirroring. Marina, we get back to Marina and Lee. Marina asks Lee to stay and talk about building their life, but Lee says he has a job to do. So this is a nice flip image of the conversation that we just had with Sadie and Jake. I mean, I like the dueling perspectives of these two couples who happen to be on opposite ends of the same event. And then, like I said in other episodes, I really enjoy the perspectives on the show that just weren't available in the book. You know, seeing Lee literally whistling while he works as he sets his perch within the depository is a fascinating and chilling character moment. And that's how it ends. And we are now ready for... we are now ready for the final episode of 11/22/63, which will premiere on Monday. And so make sure you tune in to get my thoughts on that one. This episode, like I said in the last episode, my interest in this show has decreased with every subsequent episode. I think it's competent, but I think that to me, the story in the book was not about JFK, right, and stopping JFK. It was about the life in Jody and his life as George Amberson and his life with Sadie, and you know the idea that he could stop the assassination and then live in Jody and be this man or maybe go to the future. To me. That's really what it was about, and the adaptation is all about stopping JFK from being assassinated. That's the A plot, whereas I found that he was able to build a life, and that becomes the A plot. I guess another way of looking at it is the novel was character-driven, and this is plot-driven, and it is less satisfying to me to have it be plot-driven, because I don't believe that the plot can really withstand the 8 episodes. I feel as though we're kind of stretching it a bit thin, and if we had focused more on character, where we didn't have to get CGI tears like we did last episode, and we got... Just give me 10 minutes of a... Oh, Dead Poets Society moment with Jake in the classroom, you know? Show me who he is as a person. Show me more chaperones, chaperone dances. Show me more scene, like show me any scene where he's inspiring students, either in the classroom or outside of the classroom or just in life. Like, we don't get that. There's a huge disconnect between the character and the town of Jody, and that to me is a failure on the part of the showrunner and the creative types. And maybe they had this conversation and realized that, you know, that they wanted to service the plot over the characters. Maybe this was a decision that they made. If this was a decision and not a mistake, I would argue that it was a bad decision. I think that it takes something that could have been special and turns it into something that is serviceable, watchable. But not something that's going to be memorable. Now, I say all this with one episode left, and maybe this one episode does everything to change my mind. I doubt it. And then knowing where the book went, I don't know exactly where the show is going to go. There seems to be a lot that is going to get cut out, which, again, I'm fine with. I'm just trying to predict where it could go. I imagine like the major cataclysm and catastrophes that take place because JFK is saved, and there is just catastrophic events because time has been changed. I don't think that we're going to be getting that. I don't think that we're going to be, Jake's going to get to a dystopian future. I don't think that we're going to see that. I imagine that Sadie's going to die and he's going to go to the present. And I think that we're going to get some sort of ending that mirrors the ending of the book where he says goodbye to Sadie. But the whole, like, and they danced, I feel like that it's not going to hinge on that from here until eternity. I think that that's going to be that's how it's going to end, because that's kind of been their catchphrase. So we'll find out. We'll find out next week. But in the meantime, guys, if you have any thoughts, feel free to write in at StephenKingcast@yahoo.com. And may you have long days and pleasant nights. And I will see you here next episode, where MOON spells Stephen Kingcast.